You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. It's wonderful to have your company, Dave Callum and Dave Tindall, back with you for a major week in the golfing world. The US Open Championship 2021 starts on Thursday at Torrey Pines in California. And here at William Hill, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the market. Plus, we are paying nine places each way as well. I'll spin you through the betting odds in a few moments' time. But it's good morning to Dave Tindall, who joins me on the podcast. Good morning to you, Dave.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this week. I love a major, and Torrey Pines should be it's almost a prototypical venue for a modern day US Open, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very long, which immediately makes you think big hitting will be key. If you look at the last few winners of the US Open, it's all sort of big muscle men Americans, isn't it? So this would appear to offer them another chance. Obviously, we recall Tiger Woods and Rocco Media. Were you a big golf fan by then?
Yeah, 2008? Yeah. That was, I think, his most famous major victory, wasn't it? I know people will reference Augusta a couple of years ago now, but in 2008, winning on one leg, basically. And there's that iconic footage of the putt on the 72nd hole rolling into the right edge, and then the clip of Rocco Media saying that I knew he was going to make it.
I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew it. And that gets played over and over again. And I think you get a feel for how Torrey Pines is going to play, because it's going to be baked out, isn't it, you would imagine. And those Poana greens, you see that ball, it doesn't roll end over end. It's just bumping its way towards the hole, isn't it?
Yeah, those that have been kind of used to or expecting perfect, immaculate greens have got to get used to this Poana. So that will be one of the factors. Weren't trousers terrible back then in 2008? I mean, Rocco Media was kind of a high pant wearer, but Tigers were pretty dreadful. It's funny how fashion has changed, Dave. Perhaps that could be another podcast.
Perhaps. And I'm not sure we'll have any listeners to that one, Dave, but we can endeavour to put something like that together.
Special guests.
We could do that. This course, Torrey Pines, is the host course for the Farmers Insurance Open as well. Hasn't hosted a major since that one back in 2008. A lot of people are saying just ignore that form from the Farmers Insurance Open, because the course is going to play completely differently in June compared to what it plays like in February. Why is that, Dave? And do you think we should just ignore the form that we've seen in the Farmers Insurance Open all these years?
No, I mean, I wrote a piece about the previous records of the top 10 finishes in that US Open. Obviously, Tiger had won there six times before and then went on to win. So it seemed, oh, there's obviously a good correlation. But it turns out that just about everyone else was terrible. All the other top 10s, people finishing the top 10 in 08 were awful in the normal event. Obviously, the difference is that it's much softer in January. It's going to play firmer and faster in June. But it was a big difference. But you can't really then go on to say, well, therefore, let's look for people who are rubbish in January. It's more to sort of highlight the fact that don't panic if they haven't got good January Torrey Pines form, I think. You shouldn't have like a good case on someone and then you get to check their form there in January and you go, oh no, that's ruined it. It's like, okay, from what we've learned in the past, you can overlook that.
Yeah, it's playing to a par of 71. The USGA have obviously got their hands on it now. They'll set it up to be fast and firm, as you mentioned. The fairways will be more narrow than they are for the Farmers Insurance Open. The rough will be thicker, you would imagine. And the hole they have converted is the six, which will play as a par four at 515 yards this week, rather than a par five at 564 yards. Just before I spin you through the betting, another thing I want to touch on, and it's something you referenced at the beginning of the podcast, is the US Open and how it's played statistically in recent years. That's the trend that I think is important coming in here. We've not had what you'd call a medium or short hitter since Webb Simpson won it back in 2012 at Olympic Club. It has become a big hitter's paradise, hasn't it? How do you think Torrey Pines is going to play this week, and should we focus on the longer hitters?
Yeah, the theory obviously being that if you smash it down the fairway, well, the theory is everyone will miss the fairways, and therefore it's easier if you're much further down there. And if you're much further down there, that implies that you've got a bit of strength as well, so you can get out of the rough quicker. They're kind of easier. The kind of slight thing against that with this particular course is it's Kikuyu rough, and that's not as easily hacker outable. Is that a word? I say winged foot, where you could hack out of that and kind of know more where it's going. I did read some quotes from Bryson DeChambeau a few weeks ago, actually, where he said they'll have to run some tests or something like he does in his scientific way about how the ball comes out of the rough, because I think there are times when you just can't get it out of the rough. It's just a complete hack-out job. You can't just sort of muscle your way, 150 yards to the green, 180 yards. So it's a bit more unpredictable. So therefore, because one of his big strengths, again, in these quotes, and I've seen it from others, that he's a particularly good player out of the rough because of his angle of attack, Shambo, which worked brilliantly at winged foot, but I'm not so sure it will do so great at this course where it's more unpredictable.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because you look at the two venues and you think that Torrey Pines is comparable with winged foot, but you've made a convincing argument to say it's not going to pan out how the US Open did last year necessarily, where we had long hitters dominating the top end of that leaderboard. I think it's a fascinating week, and one that I've kind of struggled to get a handle on. I've just got two bets for the event, Dave.
Yeah, I've got three. Yeah, I mean, it could easily be dominated by big hitters, because so often these tournaments are, aren't they? But I think there is scope for someone who hits it, you know, long and straight will have maybe a bit more of an advantage than just a kind of than an indiscriminate bomber who doesn't really care if it's going in the rough. I do think going in the rough, you're laying yourself open to more unpredictability than you did, say, at winged foot.
Interesting. Three selections for you then, Dave. Just a reminder, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the market, and we are paying 9 places each way, so do get involved. Your number one selection?
Yeah, my number one selection is Xander Schauffele.
20-1.
He's the one who had mysterious course form here, because he's the local guy, isn't he, from San Diego, played this course in high school, went to see the event as a kid. So all these associations with it. And yet his first three appearances here were miscut, miscut, miscut. Then he was 25th in 2019. You thought, oh, maybe he's working out a little bit, although never really in contention. But then he missed the cut again in 2020. Then he was runner-up in January, runner-up behind Patrick Reed, who, if some believe, you know, Patrick Reed should have been disqualified, maybe. So maybe he's the sort of unofficial winner, Schauffele. But I think it was a bit of a breakthrough. And it's interesting, because what we've been talking about past course form, it's like he's got a foot in both camps, hasn't he? He's got the rubbish course form. Don't panic about it. But now he has played well, I think. And the timing of that could be quite useful. And I think it was in his head that he wasn't doing well here. He couldn't quite work it out. But now he's got this second, I think that's got to help his confidence coming into this event. And his US Open record is ridiculous, isn't it? It's all top sixes. He's never finished outside the top six in four attempts. So he's got the mindset for this. He's got the game for this. He's got all the local knowledge. I always like players who have done well in the majors that season already in this event. So you've got a third place from Schauffele in the Masters, which was great. Now, he missed the cut at Kiawah Island, but he later came out and said he just didn't like that course at all. Just didn't care for it, and it showed in his play, and he was a bit kind of annoyed with himself that he let it get to him, that just because he didn't like it, that he couldn't overcome that. But it's very much an outlier in his form. Everything around that is good form. He's went on to finish 11th at Memorial, 14th at Wells Fargo. That came after the Masters top three. So he's just, you know, Pawana, he's got bought up, putting on Pawana. He's just got everything going for him, I think. And even though, yeah, he's not been winning for a little while, the fact that he's given each way back as a place return on every US Open start, you've got to think, well, at 20-1, there's a big each way kind of element going on there, and hopefully he can get the win as well.
20-1, Xander Schauffele, the headline selection for Dave Tindall at the US Open. I've got a 20-1 shot that I really like this week, and it's Rory McIlroy. I think the price is 4 points too big. I think he should be alongside Dustin Johnson at 16-1. Yeah, specifically yeah. that. He's got the farmer's form.
Exactly what you mean. Yeah.
He's got the farmer's form, having finished 5th, 3rd and 16th on his three starts at Torrey Pines. And he's got the recent win, having won at Quail Hollow again. And the fact that his irons have come around is a serious positive for me. He's gained over 4 strokes on the field in his last three starts at the Wells Fargo, where he won the PGA and the Memorial. He was obviously incredibly well-fancied at Kiowa because of his performance there in 2012. He sent off favourites for the PGA Championship. But 3 weeks later, he's 20-1 to win this event. It's a major, of course, that he's won by 8 strokes in the past, and he's finished tied 8th and tied 9th in his last two US Opens. If you believe in the narrative, this major is going to be dominated by those that hit it a long way off the tee. That could be being overplayed, but the rough is going to be thick, and I think total driving is going to be a key asset this week. And we know that even though he's gone off the boil a little bit in that regard, he's renowned for his driving and possibly the best driver in the game the last decade. And I just think getting 9 places at 20-1, I think he's a great bet this week, Rory McIlroy. And I love the price when I came to, because John Rahm's taking such a big chunk out of the market, you're getting some prices in behind. And I think McIlroy at 20-1 is the standout.
Yeah, it's all about the start, isn't it? I wrote a piece for Planet Sport the other day about starting fast in majors. It's quite revealing, really. I looked at the last 10 of each major, so that's 40 tournaments. 31 of those players had carded an opening round in the 60s. Just 2 players shot over 72. 16 of the 40 shot 67 or lower in round one. Now, Rory's major starts are horrendous. He's got just 5 rounds in the 60s in his last 24, 18 rounds in the 70s. So he really is shooting himself in the foot. His average first round score since he won at Congressional is 72.5. So he's just not giving himself a chance. So with Rory, I think, well, you can't. What do you do? Would you rather let him see if he gets a fast score and then back him at a lower price? Or are you just going to take, well, you're obviously going to take your chance now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to take my chance.
Yeah, if he did shoot something like a 68, I think then you're really, really on a runner there. But yeah, the last three majors, I mean, this thing has become a bit of a narrative, hasn't it? The last three majors, it's 75, 76, 75 in his first rounds. Yeah, it's almost getting worse. Yeah. So that is vital for him. I just hope somehow he can put a score together in round one. Because it's just, I know, it's just terrible, his first round scoring. It is such an important thing in majors.
Oh, I agree. And he would have to get off to a good start, Rory McIlroy. But I'm not quite buying into that story, in all honesty. But we'll see on Thursday, I suppose. And I think that obviously it's key that he gets off to a good start. But I don't believe it will be affecting him mentally. I guess we'll find out on Thursday, won't we? And that if it continues to be a factor, and we're thinking like in 3 or 4 years, he's still throwing in around in the mid-70s on Thursday, then yeah, maybe there's obviously it's quite a small sample size still.
It is, but obviously he did it also at Portrush to ludicrous effect when he shot 79. I looked at his round one score in this year, just in all events, it's pretty awful. I think he's about 170th.
Okay.
So he needs to find something there. But yeah, I just wonder personally that if I see him shoot a 68, I'll be thinking, right, we're in business here. Hopefully some other top players will shoot something lowish as well, and he's still a price. But yeah, I can see why 20-1 stands out pre-event, certainly.
Your second selection?
Yeah, my second selection is Patrick Cantlay at 25s.
Yep.
I'm staying on the theme that majors produce classy winners, really, and those who've never won one before. I know Phil Mickelson broke that spell with a brilliant win at Kiawah Island, but generally the pattern is for classy players who haven't won one yet to finally get their day in the sun. And Cantlay, another California boy. Now, he's one who doesn't have the course form, which could cause punters a bit of panic when they see that for the first time, because there's nothing that he's done at the course to make you think, oh, this is a good one for him. It's miscut, 51st miscut. Although one of those was in 2013. He's not played the last two editions. But you take that out, he's a brilliant player in California. Last four tournaments, he's got a win at the Zozo, a second at the American Express, third at Pebble, 15th at Riviera. So he's an excellent player in California. Most of those will be on Poana. And I don't see why he won't be able to get to grips with this course. There's plenty about it that he should like. He's got a strong all-round game, and he was coming in off a win at Memorial. So he's a player who had this strange patch of form from the Masters onwards. I fancied him for that. I might have even put him up for that. But he had miscut Masters, miscut Heritage, miscut Wells Fargo. Then clearly got something going again at the PGA Championship when he was fifth on approach. He was also fifth at Memorial, which, yeah, okay, John Rahm probably would have won, but he still, you know, once that was known that Rahm was out, he still had to go out and win it on the final day. So another win under his belt, comes in off a win. So I thought the price, I think it's sort of built in a bit of rubbish course form in there. I think he should be sort of more 22s, 20s. So 25s, I'm more than happy to take.
Yeah, fair comment. 25-1 on Patrick Cantlay. We didn't have the opportunity, because this is the first time we're doing the podcast for about a month, to talk about John Rahm. And it was kind of the worst thing that could have possibly happened for the PGA Tour, wasn't it? They were just trying to avoid a COVID-19 situation where you had a leader of the tournament by a wide margin and such a high-profile name testing positive. And the stars aligned, not in the way the PGA Tour would have wanted. And Rahm was clearly going to win the Memorial Tournament. And it was just an unfortunate situation, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, obviously, some people were saying that, well, why didn't he get vaccinated then? Which is another whole debate for another day. But I don't know. Have you seen any stats on how many golfers have been vaccinated?
I've not seen anything. I don't think it's been publicly documented, has it, really? I guess it's the choice of each individual, isn't it?
I know Ricky Fowler had been, because he said it when he was trying to qualify. He said, well, at least I've been vaccinated. But I don't know the general numbers with, well, sports people in general, I guess.
You can still test positive, can't you, even though you've been vaccinated?
You can, but I mean, he said he hadn't been vaccinated, so obviously. Okay. I guess others. Is it different for sports people? And it's obviously, age-wise, they'd be jumping the queue, wouldn't they? I guess, but I don't know whether sports people. Anyway, we're going on about something else there. But yeah, Rahm should have won. Will he win this week then? 10-1.
I think he's too short in the market, personally. Dave, and
compared to everyone else,
for a couple of reasons. We don't know how the time in self-isolation will have affected him. We don't know how the withdrawal at the Memorial will have affected him, and we're not seeing him in contention on the back nine of a major yet, have we, with John Rahm? So there's just those couple of niggling questions, and you want everything to be set and put in place to back a golfer at 10-1 to win his first major.
Yeah, it's almost the price of a sort of two-time major winner who's banging form. It's got to be worth a few points that he's never won one before in terms of, getting over that line. I mean, say Koepka had Rahm's profile and then obviously all them majors under his belt, that would be okay going 10-1, but Rahm, yeah, it just seems that For the second favourite to be 6 points higher than him just seems a bit odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think 10 to 1 is just a little bit on the skinny side, personally. I preferred McIlroy at double the price, and you obviously preferred Schauffele at double the price, and you've thrown Patrick Cantlay in there at 25 to 1. Shall I give you my second selection?
Yes. Yep.
Jason Kokrak is the second pick for me at 60 to 1. I think McIlroy's price is a strong one. I wouldn't say Kokrak is a fantastic price at 60 to 1, but I think there's still enough juice there for me to get involved anyway, given the way he struck the ball when winning the Charles Schwab Challenge. And over the last few months, he's put up some serious numbers against strong fields. He's a long, strong driver of the ball, and that will obviously be seen to good effect this week at Torrey Pines. And four of his six finishes at the Farmers have been top 30s as well. And even though putting on Poana is generally a negative for Kokrak, I think it's a positive that he's logged good figures on these greens in four of his six starts at this venue. Ninth at the WGC, eighth at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, ninth at the Players, then the win at Colonial. And then I guess you're only looking for a bit of US Open form then. And even though he's not played in many of them, his latest effort was definitely a positive with that tie for 17th at Winged Foot, a long course with thick rough, prototypical US Open venue. And I thought 60 to 1 with nine places, there's just enough juice in that price to get me interested on Jason Kokrak this week there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if I'd got a fourth pick, it would have been him. I've got one more. But yeah, I'm totally on board with him. I think at one point when I was starting off on my research, I just started imagining what they kind of looked like in terms of how tall they were and how, you know, how sort of hard far they hit it, looking for sort of muscly big hitters. Jason Kokrak, according to Wikipedia, is 6'4" and 16 stone. So he's a bit of a beast, isn't he? He's going to smash the ball, be able to get it out of the rough and all those sort of things. So, yeah, I really do like him. And you said wing foot. He was sixth at halfway there. So I think that's all money in the bank, and hopefully he can see his effort through a little bit more. And what was the stat? Something like he hadn't won for 200-odd PGA Tour events. Now he's got two in no time.
That's got
to count for plenty as well.
Yeah, so I like Jason Kokrak at 60 to 1 as my second and final selection for the US Open. Who's your third pick, Dave?
Well, my third pick is what I'm going to class as the new Tony Finau. But it's not Tony Finau. Obviously, Tony Finau, everyone kind of avoids him or starts moaning that he doesn't win in normal events. And then you've got this subset of people who go around backing Tony Finau in majors and just scooping each way money and thinking this is easy. Because he's top 10, I think, in half of his majors. He's just brilliant in the majors. But I think there's another player emerging with the same profile who you can get not at 28 to 1 this week, but at 45, Scotty Scheffler.
I thought you might have a go with Scheffler this week because he looks like the perfect type of player.
Duck to water in terms of majors, Scotty Scheffler. I mean, he was the low amateur in 2017 in the US Open. Then last year, 19th in the Masters on his debut, fourth in the PGA in California. Tied for the lead, wasn't he, in the final round in that one. Then this year, 18th at the Masters, 8th at the PGA. So he's starting to build a kind of Tony Finau profile of someone who just kind of cruises along in majors, just a very good major player, has settled in straight into those events. And yet his price, William Hill, 45 to 1, you've still got a bit more juice than you have in Finau. I mean, I wouldn't put anyone off backing Finau each way this week, but I just think in Scheffler, you've got those more attractive odds. And I just think he's now firmly part of the majors cast in terms of he's going to be on the leaderboard, no surprise to be there. Will he get it done? It's a big ask, seeing as he's never won before. But 45 to 1 is certainly an each way price. And you look at his recent form, third in the Memorial last time, eighth in that PGA. That was two starts before that. He's runner up in the match play in Texas. But it's mainly the majors thing that I like. I just think he's he will immediately go into any major, not thinking, am I good enough? Just thinking, I'm part of the cast now. I'm going to challenge. So I thought 45-1 was a good price.
45-1, Scotty Scheffler, Dave's third and final selection. Tony Finau, and I know you just mentioned him briefly there, scooping up that each way cash. He's got to the sort of price where you need a bit of win equity with Tony Finau, don't you? Which means 8-1.
Kind of, well, ideally, but you could still go around scooping each way money if you want. But I guess you could back him maybe for top in just the top 10 market and maybe do it that way.
He just struck me as a little bit short in the market this week, personally. But I don't know what you thought.
Well, I thought 25 was short. I thought 28 was just about. Yeah, that's fair enough. Because you add in his course form, which is great. 4 top sixes. Last 5 starts in California, 2 runners-up finishes and 2 fourths. Mm. So there's a lot, as well as his majors record, there's plenty of sort of added extras with him this week.
Who else do you want to mention at bigger prices? We've got 5 selections for the US Open. We'll come to the top end of the market in a few moments' time, but who came closest away from the 3 selections and Kokrak, who you said might have been 4th in?
Yeah, so I've had a little dabble on Erik van Rooyen at a massive price. He's 200-1. He's another one who's kind of got a sneaky good majors record. He's already got an 8th in a PGA. Did you see him go mad at Kiwa Island when he started smashing into a tee mark and knocked it in the water? I think that was a bit of a right. I need to just settle down now. He said he went away to his in-laws and played golf all the time, got a better attitude, and came back last week and played well at the Palmetto. So he's just someone as well. I do like these players who just seem to turn up at majors and they're slightly different animals. And I think to a lesser extent than some of them, like Finau and Scheffler, he's started to do that. He's already started. I think he's got 4 top 25s already, which might surprise some people. Mm. So I just thought he if you're looking for a crazy price, he could be a decent one.
I liked Max Homer at 90-1. I just like him on tough golf courses, a Californian as well. He can be a little bit boom or bust, but he's a player that gets really hot with the putter and won the Genesis at Riviera. That was obviously a dream come true for him. It was the LA Open. It was his big event. And enters into this on the back of a 6th place finish at the Memorial. He's one of the outsiders that people are talking about. And in my opinion, with good reason, Max Homer at 90-1.
Just as you said that, literally as you just said that, there was a little red arrow flashing next to his name and he's gone to 80s.
Oh, has he? That doesn't surprise me. And Charlie Hoffman as well at 80-1.
Yeah, I looked at him, yeah.
Yeah, in the last
few... short, maybe?
Yeah, maybe, but in the last... I think that's because of his name a little bit, Hoffman. In the last few months, only really Colin Morikawa is hitting the irons better than Hoffman. And I am struggling to see him winning a US Open. I think he can definitely hit the frame. He's actually not played in the last couple of US Opens, but finished 8th in 2017 and 20th in 2018. I think you just think Charlie Hoffman, he's not going to win a US Open, but he could easily sneak into the 9, I think.
Yeah. I looked at Sam Burns. I wonder if he's someone who could emerge and get a major quite early in his career. I mean, he won the Valspar and he was runner-up at the Byron Nelson. He's had back trouble, though, which is a slight off-putting thing. But he was top 20 in this year's Farmers Insurance Open, 3rd at Riviera on his last California start. Got a couple of other good top 7s in the Sunshine... No, in the Golden State. getting mixed up with Florida there. Just a doubt about his back. But I think Sam Burns, he's got that profile of someone who hits it a long way, is longer rather than straighter, who could start playing well in these long-course American majors.
Mm. We were spoken about John Rahm at the top of the betting, Dustin Johnson 16-1, Brooks Koepka 18-1, Bryson DeChambeau 18-1. If I gave you a tenner and you've got to stick it on one of those 3, which one would it be?
Probably Dustin Johnson.
Were you not a little bit let down by him last week? Because that Palmetto Championship, he was odds on at one point, wasn't he? Just in that, I thought anyway, going into Saturday and Sunday, he's just going to blow these lot away.
Yeah, the fact that he went odds on now, I thought, is telling, because his form was terrible before that. I just think it was asking a bit much for him to just flick a switch and go from really poor form to winning. So I don't know. I saw that as more as a building block. Nice to get one, and you know, and in the bag a little bit in terms of just contending. It's just. Yeah, another one, a kind of extreme example of someone who plays well in the majors. Dustin Johnson, perhaps, a ton of good finishes. Koepka. I don't know. You could almost just back him blind, couldn't you, in the majors for the next 5 years and not question anything else and maybe do okay. I don't know about DeChambeau. I think his sort of methodology that he used at Wingfoot won't work as well this week. Don't know what do you. So how would you rate them? I'd go DJ, Koepka, DeChambeau. Then if you're asking me for the order.
Yeah, I'm not convinced about the state of Dustin Johnson's game at the moment. So I'd probably go actually Koepka, DeChambeau, Johnson in that order.
Yeah.
Koepka's won two of the last. Four US Opens, hasn't he? And he played really well tee to green last week, but struggled around the greens and with the putter, and that's why he missed the cut. And we know he's a different proposition in major championships, obviously. But his price is about right, isn't it, this week, rather than being it's like 40, 50 to one when his game seems to be completely out of sync. It's a you've got to have a different mindset with Koepka this week, I think, at 18 to 1 than you would if he was 33s, 40s.
Yeah, definitely. You can't just play him as a value play, can you? He's joint third favourite. DeChambeau, what do you think?
I think he'll go well. I kind of equated this place more like Wingfoot than you clearly have. And that's why I think that I'll be interested to get a look at it on Thursday morning and see, just see how the rough is playing. And But I mean, it wasn't just about his ability. I mean, he separated himself from the field, didn't he, at Wingfoot by hitting the ball a long way and having the opportunity to wedge it onto the greens from the heavy, thick rough. But he still chipped and putted well. And the putter's just been a little bit in and out, hasn't it, with DeChambeau. I don't think you can rely on that as heavily this week as maybe you have been able to in the past.
Yeah. Obviously he's capable of being brilliant. I just think he's not as in control as everything as he would like to be at the minute. You sort of listen to his interviews, trying to read between the lines of all the stuff he comes out with. I think there's just a few holes in his game. Anyway, we shall see.
What do you make to Spieth, Thomas, Morikawa, those other three big Americans just in behind the three big Americans that we've just mentioned? I was tempted by Jordan Spieth, I must admit. In the last 50 rounds, there's no one gained more strokes total than him. His work around the greens, his putting is good. He's won Pebble on Poana. It might not be the ideal major championship venue for Jordan Spieth, but I definitely wouldn't rule him out.
Yeah, there's just, if you kind of track his approach numbers, they've just been kind of going down in the last few events.
Yeah.
PGA, Charles Schwab Memorial, they're only just kind of in the positive or 1 point something. Whereas before, he was gaining six shots, hit five, seven, looking going through some of them. So just maybe lost a little bit of edge on that. So if it's a momentum thing, it's kind of like he's slightly, in my view, going the other way with stuff, whereas hopefully, like, Cantlay has come right into it from having a poor run. I'm thinking DJ's maybe just timing it, so he's coming into it, might be slightly too soon. I just had Spieth as going slightly off the boil. I think Morikawa was the one that... it's hard to find a hole in if he can drive, put it in the fairway. I know he kind of went weird, didn't he, in the Memorial? It's like he's like a sort of inverted version of him, where his irons went off the boil and he started putting well. But if his normal strength comes back and the improved putting continues, he should go well again. Another one who's just taken to the majors like a duck to water.
Should we get onto the Your Odds section then? Because I think we've done plenty on the players. There's a full range of markets available here with William Hill. When we were doing our preparation work for this, they didn't have the top player markets out, but those have just popped up in the last 10, 15 minutes or so as we record this on Tuesday at midday. So do check those all out. But we've come up with a Your Odds together, as we always do for a major championship. Your selection in the Your Odds bracket, Dave.
Yeah, so I've gone with Patrick Reed to just have a top 10. I think that's a very, very reasonable ask. Remember, I put him up for the US Open last year. Did we both put him up? I don't know if we both did in this podcast at something like 33s, and he was the halfway leader, and it all looked rosy. And then his poor driving just kind of cost him.
I was on him. It was disappointing, I must admit. But I felt like the writing was on the wall a little bit as well.
Yeah, he felt like he was kind of cheating his score. He was kind of doing it a bit by smoke and mirrors. But he went to Ledbetter, didn't he, after that? And I think he realised, look, I need a more robust game to turn those positions into something more tangible. And you look at some of his results, 8th at the Masters, 6th at the Wells Fargo on a course that's been used in a major, 5th at Memorial, 17th at the PGA when he had a really good weekend. And obviously he won on this course the last time it was played there earlier this season, 6th the time before that. There's just a lot going for him, Patrick Reed. I always think he just gets overlooked a little bit compared to some of them. On bare results, his results stack up incredibly well against some of those shorter in the betting.
Yeah, Patrick Reed, top 10 finish is Dave's selection there. I'm going with Rory McIlroy for a top 5 finish. Obviously, I've made the case for Rory McIlroy in the main part of the podcast. But if you put those two together, they include ties as well, importantly. 16-1 it is for McIlroy to finish in the top 5 and Patrick Reed to finish in the top 10. So that's a 16-1 shot. Anything else you want to mention just before we wrap up here, Dave?
Just amused me that that's the top of the Your Odds. The second one on that grid is Victor Hovland to win by 3 or more shots. Where did that come from?
Well,
a bit of a random one. Why is that number 2 in the charts?
You know what? I think that was very, very popular for the last major championship, the PGA.
Well, why by Victor 3 Hovland or more? Why can't he just sort of win by? What? Because presumably someone thinks he's going to run away with it. I don't know, 75-1 seems a bit not enough for a fairly extreme result.
I suppose. I mean, if he wins it, it could be by, who knows? Who knows? 75-1, that's the second one on the list there. There's a whole range of hashtag Your Odds available here. With William Hill at williamhill.com and on the app, we've got all those top player markets out as well. Dozens of markets for you to get involved. We're top prize guaranteed on the top 10. Plus, we are paying 9 places each way for the US Open, which starts at Torrey Pines on Thursday. Let's wrap up, Dave, with your 3 picks and the staking plan for the US Open Championship.
Yeah, because I've not got any side markets apart from that hashtag Euro. As I'll go 1.5 each way on Xander Schauffele at 20-1. Same bet on Patrick Cantlay at 25-1. And then 1 each way on Scotty Scheffler at 45s.
I'm going to go 2 each way, Rory McIlroy at 20-1, and 1 each way, Jason Kokrak at 60-1. And we'll have a point between us on that hashtag Your Odds as well, with Rory McIlroy to finish in the top 5, including ties, and Patrick Reed to finish in the top 10, including ties, at 16-1. Thank you, Dave.
Yes, you, Dave.
Really enjoyed that. You can follow us on Twitter at D Kellner, at Dave Tyndall Golf. If you've got any comments about the golf podcast, do let us know. Any fancies for this week as well, drop us a line on Twitter at D Kellner and at Dave Tyndall Golf. Check out all the markets for the US Open at williamhill.com and on the app. Thank you for listening. Enjoy Major Week here with William Hill, and we'll speak again in the not too distant future. And check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app, and have a successful punting week, folks. The US Open is almost upon us.